Well, 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 how we doing, everybody? It is a beautiful Tuesday, September 9th, 2014. And if you're in Rev Nation right now, you're locked in on November. You're focused on Montreal. Because you know why? It's payback time. See? See what I did there?
Oh, I thought it was more of a reference to Chicago.
No, it's
this
payback
is a reference
time.
To Montreal.
Oh. Okay.
This is, in my opinion, the most important game. I shouldn't say the most important game. Maybe the second most important game in the month of September here. With three games left, this one for me has got to be one of the more important ones. Obviously, Sporting Kansas City at the end of the month is the most important. But, Montreal, Saturday, Gillette Stadium, it's payback time.
I think Sunday was really important, underratedly important. I mean, if they had lost that game, you're now looking at a three-way tie from third to fifth.
Brian speaks, people! Give him a round of applause.
Is it sad that I clapped for myself?
I didn't even see that. Now no. I take it back.
Okay. That was me. Okay. Yes, hello, people.
I'm Tom Quinlan.
You don't get a round of applause?
No, I don't. I get crickets.
Yeah.
And it is a 2-1 win that... Okay, I'll go with that. It's an underrated win for sure because, well, now you're one game behind Kansas City. Excuse me. You're tied in the win column with Kansas City in the Eastern Conference.
Because the Revs do not believe in ties.
Because the Revs do not believe in ties. This year, at least. Jay Heaps last year would have told you a different story.
Yes. That is very true.
And it just sticks out that Kansas City's imploding. And if you're a Revs fan, if you followed this team all year, I mean, it has been a streaky season in Foxborough, all right? Through the April 5th, the beginning of the year, Brian, just listen, because I had these numbers with John Sapicetti the other night on the post-match show. So this is what the Revs were broken down statistically win-loss throughout the year. And it's amazing that, as I said, when we go through these numbers, only three ties for Jay in 2014. Through April 5th, the team was 1-3-1. So you had the one tie in there versus... versus Vancouver. You had the two Houston and
Philly.
Houston and Philly as opening losses. And then I'm trying to remember the other loss. It's escaping me right now, but still. And then the one win came with San Jose. And then from April 12th to May 24th, this team was 6-0-1. So you start out the season 1-3-1, and then you go on a 7-game unbeaten run where you're 6-0-1. And then from May 31st, so the Montreal game, to July 26th, 0-8. Not a point in there for close to 2 months.
That was also the time the Revs got kicked out of the Open Cup by the Philly Union.
And we'll talk with Kevin Kincaid of CBS3 Philadelphia
Segway.
Today. See, that's called setting up the show.
That's what I did.
You're a pro now.
I know.
Don't hold yourself to that lower level. We'll get back to that in a second, though. And now... the streak currently for the Revs, 5-1-1, with the only loss being that 2-0 New York loss. So, my point is this. The Revs' streakiness this season has allowed them to stay within a very good position in this playoff race. They're 12-12-3. They're in third place, and should Sporting Kansas City lose this weekend to Chivas USA, which if they do, it's going to be, that'll be terrible. But if Montreal loses 3 points to the Revs and Chivas USA drops 3 points to gets 3 points on Sporting Kansas City, the Revs are in second place because they have the tiebreaker for more wins.
Yeah, I'm not going to get too excited about that. I don't see even... with Sporting and
such a
decline.
Come on, Chivas, biggest win of the year.
I don't see them losing to Chivas. I mean, that's just, it's almost impossible. I mean, it's not, but it is.
Shut up! Oh, we're dealing with construction today, too.
Yeah.
They're just going to be banging on the walls. So if you hear it in the background, we apologize. We are in the crap part of Marina Bay. right now.
Yes, the slum of Marina Bay.
Slum of Marina Bay, if you can imagine that.
Yeah.
But
I had to park my own car this morning.
The valets and tuxedos weren't out there yet. I believe that even though, yes, you're probably not going to move into second place this weekend, I think it's still a very good possibility the Revs can finish above Sporting Kansas City in the standings column when it's all said and done. I believe the margin of error for Kansas City to mess up is much slimmer than it is for the Revs, because here's why. If the Revs slip up this weekend, that was knocking on wood right there, this is what would happen.
Imitation wood.
If you get a win from Columbus, you get a win from Philadelphia, or any of the teams that could tie you in the points column this weekend, the Revs wouldn't necessarily relinquish third place because of how many wins they have. They have 12 wins,
yeah,
which is the third most in, excuse me, it's the second most in the Eastern Conference. Columbus and Philadelphia only have 9. So they could tie New England on points this weekend. The problem is for both of Columbus and Philadelphia is they don't have enough wins to, you know, take over third place or even challenge third place from New England right now. So the Revs are sitting pretty. Kansas City, a lot less room to screw up, if you will.
Yeah, and I mean, what's important, I mean, last Tuesday I was here and we had talked about this, and at that point, it almost seemed like so far-fetched, and now just 1 week later...
I'm not crazy. You looked at me like I was nuts.
I will admit, I did look at you like you were nuts, because I didn't see Sporting continue this slump, and they have. They lost 2 games last week.
What am I supposed to do? Everybody looks like
a... 4 in a row. Nuts. I mean, it's not looking good for Sporting lately.
Well, here's the thing, too. You Sporting fans got to go through this hell like Revs fans did. I find it funny.
They
this
have a
watch.
Cup. It's not the
right?
same thing.
Well, here's why I say it could be hell. You got to go play Chivas in Chivas. You got to go to L.A. You're going coast to coast in a week if you're Kansas City. I understand you're champions in the league. You have really probably technically the best roster in the conference. But I just believe those guys are worn down. On paper, yes, they are the best team in the conference, or they should be at least. But they're getting to a point, I believe, in this season that you've got CONCACAF Champions League games now.
Mm-hmm.
You've got... Well, they don't got Open Cup games. They don't got to worry about that because they're out. But you have a mix in here, a couple... I think maybe they have one more midweek game Sporting Kansas City does. And then
sounds
you have all,
right, yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's not like Kansas City is safe at all. I believe they're very, very vulnerable to drop from second place. I mean, granted, too. I mean, it's only if the Revs finish in second and Kansas City finishes in third, you're pretty much having your repeat of your Eastern Conference semifinals of last year. Only thing that's different is that second home game is here. And I think we all agree now that that second home game is going to be critical come November.
It certainly played that way last year.
Absolutely. I mean,
that was
absolutely.
The Revs, what, 2-1 going into the second leg? And Kansas
2-1
City,
going into the second leg. They had what I think they got the lead back or they tied it. I forget how it went on aggregate, but I remember watching the game and just seeing how close it was.
Yeah.
Extra time, Kansas City got the winner. And I remember sitting in my couch in Canton, and I'm like, damn it. Damn it, Matt Reese. I thought he had it. I thought he was going to be able to sweep that one away.
That was painful. Especially for Matt Reese.
Yeah, because that's not the way I think he wanted to go out in his, you know, illustrious MLS career. I mean, but we're not going to go back to blue hell. We don't have to worry about seeing blue hell for another couple of weeks when the Revs are be down in Kansas City on September 26th. But, I mean, that's where we stand right now. I still say this team can push for second. Obviously, we're focused on Saturday, the 13th, right now. But standings-wise, and I'm looking at the rest of the month here, I mean, this team is so close to... I mean, really, if you think about it, pulling off the impossible, because you don't really see teams lose 9 out of 10 and then still find a way in a 34-week season to end up in second place. Again, Jay Heaps does not like to tie this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's going through that 10-game losing streak, if you had said that the Revs were in contention to finish second in the Eastern Conference, there's no one who would have believed that situation. But, I mean, a lot has changed. I mean, no one saw Jermaine Jones walking through that door either.
And look at what Jermaine Jones has done to the on-field play. Brian, you're sitting there for Chicago the other night.
A true designated player.
Man, doesn't it feel good when that money pays off?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, for him to come in, he's one of the few players that has made that amount of money that's made instant impact. I mean, he's gotten 2 assists in 2 games, almost came close to getting his first goal, and just his work rate on the pitch is just...
Do you have a question about his fitness anymore?
No, not at all. I mean, he played 89 minutes last night, or Sunday night. I mean, he gets a little bit lethargic towards the end, but if you watch him play, he's giving 110% for 85 of those 89 minutes, and then he started to drag ass, but after running around that much, I don't fault him for that at all. It was an incredible, incredible game for him.
And the enforcer that he is on the field, you know what I mean? Nothing gets by this guy anymore. You don't... I mean, teams are essentially in that midfield thinking twice before going in for challenges, whether he be for Jermaine or Scott anymore, because, you know, if somebody messes up Scott or anybody else on the field, you saw Jermaine the other night. Oh, I forget. I think it was Lorenowitz that pushed Kellen Rowe, and then Jermaine gets right in his grill.
Yep.
That's where Jermaine gets his first yellow card.
Well, that was more for dissent, but...
Was that? Oh, that was... Yeah. I thought that was for...
No, Jermaine got his yellow card after he was tackled outside of the box. He went to go yell at the ref, because I believe it was Caldwell got tackled in the same exact manner, or Caldwell tackled someone, Caldwell got the yellow, so Jermaine Jones is like, yo, what the F? And he got a yellow, deserved.
But you need that guy on the field.
Yeah, no, I mean...
definitely need that guy.
For Jermaine Jones to get that yellow, I mean, first off, it's a classic Jermaine's Jones yellow card for dissent. I mean, that's what he does. Like, the dude is just a yellow card waiting to happen. It's also... pretty sure it's a second or third yellow card, so we actually kind of have to be cautious of that coming up on Saturday. It's at least his second.
It's his second. I don't think he got one in against Kansas City. Let me pull that up. But yeah,
I feel like he got one in Toronto.
He did get one in Toronto. He didn't get one against Kansas City, though.
So then it won't be so much of an issue, but I feel like he has gotten one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, they're going to keep him mindful of it. Especially against Montreal, where you don't want to pick up a stupid yellow because, you know, the following 2 games are important here in Columbus and Sporting Kansas City. So you don't want to test it. You don't want to test those waters if you're Jermaine Jones. And the schedule looks like this. Just coming up real quick. Columbus, Sporting Kansas City after Montreal. And then back home here versus Columbus. And then 2 on the road and then finishing up against Toronto. But that, you know, that's just a little semantic schedule stuff. But bringing it back more to the on-field play with Jermaine Jones, it's obviously offensively we've seen a huge uptick. And then it allows a guy like Lee Wynn to just facilitate and be that point guard in the offense. I believe his game has looked so much different.
Lee has been probably the best midfielder over the last month.
Yeah.
In the entire league.
And even now with Jermaine in the lineup... And I don't want to put this all on Jermaine, and I've been saying that for a while, because they played well against Chivas USA, and I thought they played well for about 80 minutes against Portland until they gave up the tie. So, you know, my point is that this team has been playing well for a little bit here. It's taken a while to find that consistency, but when you have a guy, a true designated player that's filling that role, you can make mistakes on the field in order to get back to that consistency, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, the best thing that Jermaine Jones has offered is if you look back to the Charlie Davies goal.
Oh.
The run that Jermaine Jones makes. I mean, that play, I said this on Twitter, best goal of the entire season, in my opinion. Because if you look at it, it started with spectacular defense from Jogo. Laid it off to Jermaine Jones. He did, a 60-yard run with, 2 guys, on top of him. Literally, just carried 2 fire players on his back. passed it off to Davies. Davies with a nice strike, nice finish. Revs win a game.
And that's that center of the spine thing that we're talking about. The Revs being so strong down the middle. I mean, that's the type of play that you want to see come from you guys. And, you know, Jose Gonsalves was named man of the match the other night. You got to give him credit, too, I guess, for stepping up his game recently.
He is back.
I'm not going that far yet.
He's back. He's been good.
He's been decent.
He's been good for many weeks.
He did deserve the man of the match the other night.
He's been good for many weeks in a row.
Stop it. Stop it. He's been decent.
He was impactful on the first goal, too. He played an important role in both those goals.
But, you know, if you're going to say Jose Gonsalves has been good, you got to look to – I feel like you have to look to A.J. Soares as well.
But I'm
– And then you have to look in between the pipes with Bobby because Bobby's had his fair share of shutouts too.
But I've never not been off the A.J. Soares bandwagon. I'm an A.J. Soares fan.
Not everybody agrees with you, though. Everybody's quick to go to Jose and then say Jose does it all out there.
Nope. I think that A.J. Soares has been one of the most consistent center backs through the entire league, even through a 9-game losing streak. I would still say he's probably top 10 center back in the entire league.
I mean, listen, this defense had a great week. 3 games in 8 days, and they only allowed 2 goals. And the Revs put up 8-2. They outscored opponents in 3 games in 8 days. Those are great numbers right there. And great numbers for the defense, great numbers for Bobby. And something that you need to realize, hey, we're still this good. One guy adds a lot to our roster. Let's make sure that we make the most of it, especially when he's out there healthy, because you don't know what you're going to get next year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm not trying to think next year yet, but I think sky's the limit right now for this team. You could still say this team is capable of pie in the sky right now. I'm too pie in the sky. I'm going to come down a little bit. Brian, just bring me down.
Want me to try to bring you down?
Bring me down.
Okay. This is a hot take.
Go.
I'm gonna space this out. The Revs have won, which is great.
Sure.
They haven't beaten any of these teams' best 11 for weeks. If you look down the line, they didn't beat the best Sporting Kansas City has to offer.
Right, because Arlen Collins was on the bench. Yeah.
And Dwyer and Phil Harbor were suspended.
Great point.
Chicago. No McGee last night or Sunday night. What's his name? Spenceworth or something like that? I forget his name. He wasn't in the 18 either.
Pull up their roster right here. I got it right in front of me.
Earnshaw.
Yeah. Robert Earnshaw.
He's been doing well. The Revs are taking advantage of this. They're winning and they're doing great. I'm not taking anything away from this, but they're not beating these teams' best 11.
Harrison Shipp came off the bench the other night, which I thought was interesting. They're not beating but they're winning. You have to take the points. It doesn't matter if it's best 11 or not.
I do, but how true of a sample is this if you're not beating the best these teams have to offer?
If you're limiting teams to one or nothing with goals, I don't think that matters because your defensive effort shows that you're able to sustain a 90 minutes and keep the game, you know, up in the air for your team to win.
But just go back to Sporting. So they did score one. They scored one without their best midfielder and without their best attacker. That's not that impressive if you think about it. Like, yes, they took advantage of that game, but they weren't playing Dom Dwyer, who has 18 goals on the season. They weren't playing Benny Philharbor for the first half of the season. As much as I hate that guy, was the best midfielder for probably 3 months of this season. That's impactful.
I won't disagree with that. No, I won't disagree with that.
Or on Sunday night, you're playing Chicago, who, you know, they've done okay when McGee's not in the lineup, but he's still a different look when you're going against Quincy Ameriquois and Mike McGee as opposed to Quincy Ameriquois and Sonny Niasse. That's a total different look. So I think people need to realize that over the last, I think it's 3 weeks now.
No, but it's not like you, okay, so Defoe wasn't in there for Toronto, but you still had Michael Bradley in there for...
Who's not playing well.
But it's Michael Bradley.
But it's still, you're still not playing the best that team has to offer.
It's Kubo Torres played for Chivas USA. The Revs only got a 1-0 win in that game.
They're just not that good anyway, though.
Fair enough.
I mean, and also, if you look at that, that's a situation where they had just lost Mara Rosales, who was their spine. He was their Lee Wynn and Daigo Kobayashi and won, and he was gone. He was the one who fed the ball to Cuba Torres most of the time. I think it's important,
but I'm trying to find a silver lining here within your new take. I'm not disagreeing with it. The Revs, you know, but you can't take away the fact that the Revs still picked up the 3 points in those games.
And like I said, I acknowledge that. I'm not even trying to say, oh, the Revs aren't beating the best. They're not going to be that great. I still think the Revs are going to do well for the remainder of the season, regardless of who they come up against. I think that. Next, on Saturday, when Montreal comes to town, I think it's going to look totally different than we went to Montreal earlier in the year.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
When we go to Columbus does not scare me at all. Columbus is not as good as their record shows. I've said that from the very first time I've been on this podcast. They are a one-trick pony. You stop Higuain, they got nothing. Like, nothing at all.
Let Finley run down the middle again.
Yeah, they have Michael Parkhurst and Justin Merrim. And Finley, not even that good, to be perfectly honest.
Well, there you go. So, you know, the Revs have now got to find themselves to... Well, they just got to keep on winning these games. I mean, you know, you play... It doesn't matter. In my opinion, here's how it goes. It doesn't matter what opposing 11's out there. Get the 3 points, and then that's all that matters at the end of the day. You know what I mean? You as a team have to be playing right going into the playoffs. You as a unit have to be playing okay. Jay threw out a 4-2-3-1 the other night. All right? It's not like we've seen this formation all year. Jay, for the first time, throws out a 4-2-3-1 on the third game in an eight-night stretch of game. On the third game... In 8 nights, Jay throws out a completely different formation with 2 holding midfielders. And that is, you know, that's got to be the bigger storyline. Not that Mike McGee sitting out for Chicago. And granted, again, I know what Mike McGee brings to that Fire offense. But, you know, you as a team have not played this formation really all year. And you got to make sure that you're ready to... Because those were 3 critical points that you needed to pick up the other night, and you were able to get the job done in a new system. So that for me, is the bright, shining light moving forward, is that if Jay can get the, you know, guys playing right, it doesn't matter who's out there. And that's where I'll leave it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that Jay finally changed the formation, and he actually...
You and everybody else in New England.
He picked a formation that actually fit the personnel, which...
No kidding.
They have not done since Juan Agudelo was on the team. So, I'm really excited for that.
Usually, as you know, Brian, Tuesdays we talk club. But guess what? We've had no international games. So, we can't talk about the Premiership.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about MLS here today. We talk about the Revs, but you can't just focus on the Revs in the Eastern Conference because they haven't been the only team in the East in the later part of this season to really pick up their game and I think shock everybody. I think the one team that started that trend first here in 2014 had to have been the Philadelphia Union in the middle of the summer. What an incredible uprise they've had recently.
No doubt. They have been one of the hottest teams in the Eastern Conference since they switched coaches, which is pretty unheard of.
Yeah, we'll check in right now with our friends down in Philadelphia, none other than Emmy Award winner Kevin Kincaid of CBS. Kev, welcome back to the pod. A real exciting time for the people in the city of brotherly love down there. What's the atmosphere been like since the Union have now taken over?
What's up, gentlemen? Yeah, count me in as one of those surprise people at the turnaround down here. You know, I don't think a lot of people saw it coming, but, you know, it was the coaching change pretty much, I think, that made the difference. The atmosphere's been good, you know. Been selling out pretty much every game, you know, for a team that had 3 wins at the World Cup break. It's astonishing to see where they are right now, you know, for just as quickly as they tanked, you know, they turned it around even quicker. It's been amazing to watch. It was almost like the Eagles and the Jaguars first half and second half on Sunday, how the Union has turned it around in the first half and the second half of the season.
Yeah, Chip Kelly had a awkward opening day, but I know Eagles fans are happy. Sticking with the Union, though, you had a home-at-home series with Toronto FC, and as Revs fans know, the Reds up north seem like they're imploding, and it didn't get any easier for the boys in Toronto seeing Philadelphia. Just a couple of games, can you talk about what you saw against Toronto FC?
Yeah, isn't it interesting how this works out? Because, you know, now in the Eastern Conference, they have this unbalanced schedule where, you know, because there's more teams in the East than the West, a couple of Eastern Conference teams, you're only going to play each other twice, and everybody else are going to play three times. So the Revs and the Union played three times each, and Toronto and Philly only played twice, and it was this weird home-and-home weekend series. So I think at the beginning of the year, Philadelphia Union fans are saying, well, good, we only get Michael Bradley and Jermaine Defoe twice this year. And it turned out that that was, you know, it's almost like, wow, can we play him again? Because you caught him at such a poor time, you know, with them just firing their entire coaching staff, the rumors surrounding Jermaine Defoe and all that stuff. And they went out and they took advantage of a team that was in turmoil. And that's something that you didn't see from previous Union teams, to be able to, when they're the favorite at home, go out and win and get a shutout and then be able to capitalize on that and take that into the next thing. It was weird. It felt like an ice hockey kind of matchup, you know, where the Bruins and the Rangers play on Saturday and then they play again on Sunday at the other guy's arena. So, no, it was good. I mean, that was if a team's below you and team's not doing well, you have to go out and you know, put your authority on them. And I think the Union did that, and that's not something that we've seen from them over the last 4 or 5 years.
No, and especially, you know, really disrupting Toronto's season. Now Toronto sits in seventh place and Philadelphia sits in fifth place. And, you know, the styles and differences of teams where they're going opposed to the beginning of the season to now, and just the confidence you're hearing around the Philadelphia locker room after just a couple of impressive wins.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. I think that these guys are the players will throw all kinds of cliches at you, like, you know, we're just taking it one game at a time, or we're just looking for the 3 points.
It's like they're reading a book or something, right?
Yeah, it is. But,
written by Bill Belichick.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, he wrote that book. He authored that book, didn't he? But no, in the case of the Union, it's true. I mean, they just go one game at a time. They got enough young guys that they haven't really been in this position before. They're just sort of taking, you know, whatever comes ahead of them. They've been balancing Open Cup with you know, regular season. It's really interesting. I think they're kind of they've kind of taken on the personality of Jim Curtin in this short amount of time, where he's just like, you know what, we'll put the best team we have on the field and we'll play whatever game's in front of us, and that's it. You know, and he's a guy who gets it because he played in this league for a long time. So I think they're sort of responding to that. It's not, you know, we joke about it as writers because we come out of these press conferences, we don't really have any good quotes or anything worth talking about, but the team's, because the team's winning and they're just going about their business. So I guess as a fan, that's the best thing you can hope for, you know?
So you mentioned the Open Cup a week from today. Actually, you guys have the final in your home field. How is that going to affect the next three games? Obviously, you guys are playing New York at home, Seattle at home for the Open Cup, and then Houston at home.
You know what? I don't think they're going to rest one damn person for Tuesday.
I love it.
And
I love it.
Yeah, and it's interesting because they had this issue before. A couple weeks ago at the semifinal in Dallas where they had a game on Saturday, and I was saying, you know, maybe Connor Casey might want to give him a rest before going down there and playing, you know, 90 minutes, which ended up being 120 minutes in Texas. But, you know, no, they've been running Sebastian Letou every single day. They've been running guys on short notice. They're in great fitness, great shape. I think the goalkeeping situation is going to be interesting. Rice Mboli plays for Algeria on, you know, 9-10. He played for him on 9-10, you know, so he should be back you know, either 1 or 2 days before the Red Bulls game on Saturday. So I don't know if they try to play him on Saturday, because it should be Zach McMath in goal at the
absolutely.
Open Cup final.
It
would be a travesty for him not to play, yeah.
Absolutely. How important is the Open Cup for Philly?
I think it's huge, personally. If you ask me, I'd take the Open Cup over even getting into the playoffs. To me, if you ask me, if they win the Open Cup and then somehow fail to make the playoffs, I still think it would be a successful year because – and there's a lot of people who disagree with me on that and say they want to get into the playoffs and they want to make a run in the playoffs. But, you know, as Herman Edwards once said, you play to win the game, right?
Oh, my God. So, another great quote guy.
So we're in the business. Are we not? Do we not play this to win trophies? you know, especially for a franchise that hasn't even been around for a full 5 years yet, for a burgeoning franchise like that to have an opportunity to host a cup final within the first 5 years of existence, that's huge. I mean, considering where they were under John Hackworth, the fact that they have Seattle at home in a cup final after they went into the World Cup break with three wins, that's astonishing to me. So that would go really a long way in the city that's still, you know, still in the mainstream media here, and the mainstream fan base hasn't really grown to like soccer all that much. But you show them that you win a trophy, and that'll catch some people's attention.
Is this season considered a success for Union fans already?
I think the jury's still out on that. You know, I think you have to get to the end of the season and then take a look back at it, because Jim Curtin's only been in charge for 2.5 months now, I think. You know, and everybody's got a different definition. I think the fans are more interested in getting to the playoffs and making a run in the playoffs and being able to compete in that, because I think some of them look at the Open Cup and they say that, well, some teams don't take it seriously. You know, New York Red Bulls don't really take the competition that seriously. I know New England usually throws out a pretty good squad in that, but you know, some people value the MLS regular season a lot more than the Open Cup. Me personally, I'd take a trophy, but you know, I think it depends what they do at the end of the season. If they keep Jim Curtin too, and whether they hire a new coach, I'm going to count that as part of the whole big process, and then we'll sort of reevaluate it at the end of the season. But right now, I'd say to the management at least, I'd say don't touch anything. Just keep doing what you're doing, and make a decision at the end of the season. You know.
So we're on the phone here with Kevin Kincaid from CBS 3 in Philadelphia, talking Philly Union. So you know, you're mentioning Jim Curtin. You guys started the season 3-7-6 since Curtin's been taking over. You guys are 9-2-3. What's mm-hmm. the biggest thing he's added to this team?
You know, it's funny because everybody's trying to put their finger on what's been the big difference here, and there really hasn't been a big difference. He's just kind of shifted a couple guys around and got them into their natural positions. They're essentially playing the same formation that they were playing under John Hackworth. It's sort of this 4-4-3-3, and depending on the personnel, if they're missing a guy or two, it'll run like a 4-2-3-1. But you know, he moved Maurice Adu from the midfield back into the central defense, and he got Amobi Okugo out of the back line and moved him into the midfield. Ethan White got out of the doghouse, and he saw the field for the first time. So basically, he just shored up the defense. Ray Gattis on the left, Shane Williams on the right, Ethan White at center back with Maurice Adu, and then they got Carlos Valdez back, so he should be starting there soon. Pushed Amobi Okugo up, and he got Sebastian Latu into a forward position. I mean, he's been doing it with the same exact personnel. I mean, Carlos Valdez and Ryson Boley have only played 3 combined games for the team. So he's been doing it with the same exact guys that John Hackworth did. He just sort of has them in the right positions. He has them playing a better game. He has them just being more assertive. Hey, if you want to counterattack, go for it. If you want to try to possess, go for it. They're scoring goals in different ways, and they don't. And he basically came out and said, we don't really have an identity. You know, we're just sort of finding a way to do it however we can. But basically, it was just moving 2 or 3 guys around and just shoring up the defense.
Yeah, as a neutral fan, I can definitely say that Philly has looked so much better since Curtin's taken over. A lot more exciting to watch. After you guys beat Toronto that second time, Taylor Twellman tweeted out actually about Curtin being up for Coach of the Year. How realistic do you think that is?
You know what? It's funny. I don't know how much of a body of work. It's hard to compare a guy. I guess if he would take the team to the Open Cup, win the Open Cup, and then get deep into the playoffs, I'm sure he could write him in as a candidate just as much as anybody, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody's going to surpass Ben Olsen or, you know, an Oscar Pereja for their body of work over an entire season.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, it's interesting. I think Jim's done a really good job. It's interesting because Jim's only 34 years old, and Jim's sort of path to where he is now is very interesting. He played with Peter Novak on the Chicago Fire way back in 2000, 2001, 2002, and when he came, Jim is a Pennsylvania native, a Philadelphia native. When he came back home, he wanted to work on the coaching staff for the Philadelphia Union, and Peter said, he wanted to play for the team. He wanted to play for the team, and Peter said, no, I don't want you to play for this team. So he gave him a job as an academy coach. Peter got fired, Ben Hack got fired, and then all of a sudden Jim's leading this team to the finals of a cup competition, so go figure, you know.
That's an amazing journey for one person. He's Kevin Kincaid of CBS3 in Philadelphia. Follow him on Twitter at KevinKCBS3. Kev, real quick, how do you think the rest of this Eastern Conference finishes out when it's all said and done?
I really like your guys. You know, I think
don't say that. Don't change it.
No. Listen. Well, look. You guys already went through the big slump in the middle of the year. You know, and such the longest time that the Revs just needed sort of another midfielder to kind of, you know, because Scott Caldwell and Andy Dorman, for the stuff that they had done well over the year, they needed sort of a stud in that more defensive kind of you know, midfield position. So I think Jermaine Jones was a big addition. You know, I don't know about KC and DC. You know, I think the East is wide open. I mean, you see how clustered it is. I don't know if Toronto is going to be able to recover from what they've done. You know, even if they get Stephen Caldwell back, I don't know how much that really helps. Kansas City, I'm sure, will be in the playoffs and they'll figure something out. DC, nobody really knows how good they are. You know, they've got a rebuilt team with a bunch of veteran guys, and who knows how far they'll go. Eddie Johnson's the problem there. So, you know, I'm sure Houston will probably find a way in. It's a mess, but it's interesting. That's why we like MLS, you know, because there's so much parity that nobody really knows what the hell is going on.
He's an Emmy Award winner for a reason. Soccer League beat writer for the Philadelphia Union, and you can catch him on CBS 3 in Philadelphia. Kevin Kincaid, he's great as always. Kev, good talking to you, my man, and we'll talk soon, all right?
All right, thanks, guys. Always a pleasure. Take it easy, all right?
You too, Kev.
Look at you resetting interviews, Mr. Radio Pro.
I did it. Crossed it off my bucket list.
It was like watching a new bike rider go without training wheels.
I was hoping you were going to say like a baby walk for the first time.
I was going to give you more credit than a baby.
All right, well.
I tried.
It's still pretty impressive.
Set the substandard.
It's still impressive. A baby walking for the first time is actually a little bit more impressive than a child learning to ride a bike.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I'll give you that one. Kevin Kincaid is always great. Oh, Philadelphia,
I actually didn't feel as guilty talking about Philly as I thought I was going to. I thought I was going to feel like
dirty
after. But Philly actually has been pretty exciting since Curtin's taken over.
I'm surprised that they've got their eyes on New England, though. I'm surprised that, you know, with what Kevin had to say there to finish up about, you know, where everything could land with the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
Not necessarily as much with Toronto, because I could see Toronto faltering the way they are right now. But just as a whole, you know, the Eastern Conference, not enough faith in Kansas City or DC United.
Yeah. I think another thing, I'm just jealous of Philly because they had the guts to fire their head coach.
Oh, here we go.
They did it. They did it. And for everyone who says that it doesn't matter, they were 3-7-6. Now they're 9-2-3 with Curtin, and they're going to.
What are you trying to get out here? What are you trying to get out here?
I wish we fired Heaps when we had the chance.
Oh, my God.
I said it.
Why?
Because we should have.
They're 5-1-1 in their last seven.
So?
Everybody has streaks. Jay, that was Jay's worst losing streak in a 3-year tenure. 0-8.
That's a hell of a losing streak.
It's a hell of a losing streak.
That's a hell of a losing streak in like a 40-year tenure as a coach, like let alone a 3-year tenure.
Listen, I'm not saying it was good, but you know what? Ben Olsen finished in dead last year.
They should have fired him last year. They should have.
But they didn't, and now Olsen is leading DC United to possibly a supporter shield.
All through the reentry.
Welcome to soccer.
All through the reentry draft, that anyone could have had those players that they had.
Well, yeah, Eddie Johnson was a huge addition.
Not really. He's not having an Eddie Johnson type season.
Well, you're getting Fabian Espindola is having a great year.
Who was open to everybody?
Chris Rolf.
He was also reentry draft.
I think so.
So I mean. Those two people, like, the Revs could have had Espindola. Like, anyone in the league could have had Espindola. He went in the second round.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You don't tell a Revs fan that you're going to go out and try to hope that you get good players in the reentry draft. They're going to say, well, what the hell? Why aren't you spending designated player money?
The Revs actually put a lot of good players in the reentry draft. Chad Barrett was in the reentry draft, and he's having a hell of a season.
They did. Chad Barrett is, I think Chad Barrett needed a change of scenery. I don't know if New England was necessarily the greatest of places for Mr. Barrett.
I don't think he and Heaps got along very well.
I don't see that being a very good relationship. I don't know. I see Chad, because I've seen Chad before play, and I've, you know, and hearing stories about the guy, I've heard that he, you know, he likes to be the guy, you know, in most situations. Obviously, he's not the guy out in Seattle, but
he's playing fourth fiddle in Seattle and doing well. So
probably going to win an MLS Cup.
Probably going to win the treble.
We'll see about that, man. I don't know. I'm interested to see what the U.S. Open Cup final looks like because it's in Philadelphia. You know, that's, I want to see Dupland packed out for that game.
I want to go to that game so bad.
Wow.
I
support the East.
I want to go to that game.
Support the East.
I support the Open Cup. I've been to like 4 Open Cup matches for next year already.
So you've already been to them in the future.
I've been to like the qualifiers for next year.
Oh, okay. Wow, you already get into it.
Oh yeah. Open Cup.
All right. I'm down. I'm game. So
next Tuesday, let's do it. Right after we leave the pod.
Just go straight to Philadelphia?
Right to Philly and then right back.
Okay. If there's enough people that want to come down with us for a road trip one night, me and Brian are just making that happen right now.
I will go.
If we can get enough people to do this, are we serious about doing this?
I can take a day off of work, yeah.
If we get 50 people, well, I'll see about...
50? I was talking like 3 others to go in a car.
Oh, well, I'm talking like... I want to go down with a... Listen.
You're not getting 50 people. You can't even get 50 people to get from Quincy to go to a friggin' Revs game, let alone an Open Cup game in Philly.
Not if you provide them with free transportation.
No. In Chester, of all places. Not even Philly.
It's not even
Chester.
But it is right on the Delaware River, which is... Is that the Delaware River right behind the stadium? Yeah, it's beautiful back there.
It is a nice... It's a nice...
A nice scenery.
Yeah.
You know?
Away supporters sit right there, too. Sit right there on the water.
Yeah, the nice view is something to watch in March, that's for sure, when you went down to Philadelphia.
Yeah, especially
too. All right. Let's do this. Let's go around and see what happened in the week of MLS, just in case you're a little behind the schedule. Let's start off in Friday night, Home Depot Center, LA. Not my team, but the Galaxy. 6-0 winners over Colorado.
And brutal.
And, well, I've been saying it for a while, Colorado's just been on a downswing.
Well, they lost their 2 best players.
That's, I mean,
that's going to happen. You lose your best midfielder and best center back, chance that you're going to lose some games.
I got one name for American soccer fans that you should be keeping an eye on.
Landon Donovan.
Shut the hell up. Giassi Zardes.
Oh.
14 goals in 24 matches this year. He's a stud. He had... His rookie season was last year. He had 4 goals. He's already plus 10 for 2014. How isn't this guy at least in consideration for MVP this year?
Racism? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think the one slight against him, and this is...
He plays with Robbie Keane and Landon Donovan.
Yeah, and then also I think there's this common theme amongst leading goal scorers this year that have like next to no assists.
That's true. He has only 1 assist on the year, Giassi does.
And that's the same for Dwyer, and it's the same for Wright Phillips.
But you know what? Consideration is all I'm saying.
No, he's definitely in consideration for me. And real quick, I'm not going to be on the pod Thursday, so I want to give fantasy advice for everyone.
Fantasy advice. Listen.
Get anyone and everyone from L.A. They are playing Montreal and San Jose this week. Get everyone. Max out your 4 players. I don't care who it is. I have Gargan, Donovan, Zardes, and Keane. Get everyone.
That's
you
the hottest
can.
Take of the day.
Get everyone. My God, if you have any chance of doing anything in fantasy, and this week I'm going to guess Seth Maycomber in the Q spot fantasy league.
Which is still existing.
I'm going to beat him. He's number 1. I'm 8th. I'm taking him down.
And we just... That's a shot to the...
L.A. Everybody. I don't care who it is. They're playing the 2 worst teams in the league. They are the hottest team in the league.
Next up, you just heard it from our favorite guest, Philadelphia's own Kevin Kincaid, as the Union take down Toronto FC by a final tick of 2-0. Connor Casey, Andrew Wenger, 2 goals. And there you go.
Yeah. Toronto still sucks.
Blowing up. They're imploding.
You're welcome, Philly, because we broke Toronto for you.
They broke Toronto. The Revs did. New York! 2-1 winners over Sporting Kansas City. And now, New England closes in on that points gap with Kansas City. Bradley Wright Phillips with a goal that came off a penalty kick in the 11th minute. I thought Bradley Wright Phillips drew it. New York fans would tell you that it was a little bit weak. Thierry Henry.
What do you think of that goal?
Oh my gosh. He's still got it.
He does. But the way that goal is hyped up by MLS is ridiculous.
Oh yeah, no, I don't like how it's hyped up, but like, it was definitely a shot.
Like the second he scored that goal, MLS like goal of the year. It wasn't even goal of the week. Like, let's be honest.
Dom Dwyer had the lone goal for Kansas City.
I actually prefer Dom Dwyer's goal over Thierry Henry's goal.
Dom Dwyer's goal was nice. It was pretty. Next up, it is Houston versus Montreal. And Houston takes down Montreal 3-2. And I saw you tweeting out this one about the game. A little awkward at times. It was a... excuse me. Get ready for the shooting gallery on Saturday if you're a Revs fan, I think. Giles Barnes had a goal in the 30th minute. Then Dili Duka equalized in the 40th minute.
Didn't even know he was on the impact.
Montreal took a 2-1 lead off of Ignacio Pilati, 55th minute. Giles Barnes with a brace. He pulled it back in the 62nd minute.
Good week for the British in the MLS.
Yep, and then Ricardo Clark closes it out in the 65th minute. And Houston keeps themselves alive for another day.
I still think they're going to make the playoffs somehow.
Something tells me that they're going to do it, too.
You
feel it.
Death, taxes, and Dom Kinnear in the playoffs. Like, you just cannot rule those things out. Like, they're going to happen.
In life, yes, they will.
Yeah.
2-1 winners, Real Salt Lake over FC Dallas. A little bit hurtful for FC Dallas as you look at the Western Conference standings. They sit in fourth place still. They'll make the playoffs this year, but... they really could have used a huge win in the Rio Tinto the other night. Robbie Finley with a 31st-minute goal. Michael with a 62nd-minute goal for Dallas. And then Alvaro Severio closing down in the 77th minute for Real Salt Lake. They're 2-1 winners. And Salt Lake is a playoff team that is a team that's much different come the playoff time. So
they're so fun to watch.
They are a lot of fun to watch. Vancouver! And D.C., 0-0. Didn't know to say anything about that game. Columbus, 3-0 winners over Chivas, USA. Let's see. The scorers in that game were Justin Moram with a brace and Bernardo Anor with the third goal on the evening. And then you had a shootout between San Jose and Portland that finished down 3-3. And Portland...
Heartbreaking.
Falling in... the MLS standings. And talk about heartbreaking. Where's my coffee this morning?
Screw you. I won that bet.
Oh, that's right. You did. Never mind. Chris Wondolowski opened the scoring in the 21st minute for San Jose. In the 48th minute, San Jose went up 2-0 over Cordell Cotto's goal. And then two pulled back by Portland in the 54th minute by Alvis Powell, and then in the 74th minute by Liam Ridgewell. Wondolowski had a brace on the afternoon, though, with a other goal in the 85th minute, but as we said, the game finishes in a 3-3 tie. Khalif Hassan with the tying goal in the 86th minute.
I want the real stat of that game.
What is the real stat of that game?
Diego Valeri, 3 assists for the Timbers. All 3 assists. All 3 goals, all 3 assisted by Diego Valeri. He's the man.
Okay. And then obviously we know this one. The Revs. 2-1 winners over. I almost said 3-1. I can't get that Kansas City win out of my mind. But the Revs, 2-1 winners over Chicago. And obviously, Sana Niasi, the lone goal for Chicago. The goal is for New England coming from Diego Fagundes. Welcome back to the scoring sheet, kid. And Charlie Davies. So Fagundes scores this weekend, and guess what? To your dismay, he's starting against Montreal.
Yeah, that is to my dismay. Good goal. I mean, not a typical Diego Fagundes goal at all.
You want to talk about things that were overblown. His goal celebration was overblown. It was an all right celebration, all right? He shot guns with the musket men. Minuteman, whatever it is.
He air shot a gun. If he actually shot the gun.
Give him a gun next time and then make it.
Yeah.
See that, Diego, I hope you're listening right now. Celebration for a suggestion.
Well, I hope he's not. I just said to my dismay, he's not. Oh, man.
Well, obviously they're going to listen to you, Brian. You're a professional. You just have to roll with the punches, man. You're
all
a pro.
All right.
Say, I am a pro.
I am a pro.
I will say what I feel.
I will say what the F I want.
There you go. Quick look at the standings. And Brian just gave me the suck it sign.
Actually, real quick, it wasn't the suck it sign. that goal celebration, they were talking about in the Daily Mirror in England.
Yeah.
Why?
Because it wasn't even that great.
Like, I thought Charlie Davies was better. Because I don't know what the hell it was. He's like, I'm a little teapot with muscles. I don't know.
Yeah, that was weird. That was weird. I'll give you that. But that looked like a European thing because he was like signaling at Jermaine, like, yeah. Come here. Come here.
Yeah.
I don't know. DC United in first place with 47 points, 14-8-5 on the year. Sporting Kansas City in second with 42 points, 12-10-6. The Revs in third place with 39 points, 12-12-3. If Kansas City loses and the Revs win this weekend, the Revs take second place. Yeah, I just said that.
Don't get your hopes up. Sporting Kansas City's playing Chivas.
Come on, Chivas. Columbus in fourth place with 36 points, 9-9-9. Same thing with Philadelphia, exactly the same record. In the West, Seattle, 51 points. They lead the Supporters' Shield race with 16-7-3 on the year. 51 points, as I just said. Galaxy closing in, though, with 49 points, 14-5-7 on the year. Real Salt Lake at 46 points, 12-5-10. FC Dallas with 42 points at 12-9-6. And then the Timbers at 35 points, 8-8-11. There you go. Big games midweek this week. You know, we got tomorrow night Montreal and L.A., New York and D.C., Vancouver and San Jose. And there you go. Okay. And good luck to all my Mexican fans out there. They got Bolivia in a friendly today, 10 o'clock tonight.
No luck to you.
Oh, I love Miguel Herrera.
No luck.
Follow Brian Speaks at Brian_Speaks. Thank you, Kevin Kincaid. I'm Tom Quinlan. I'm not going to see you on Thursday, buddy.
No, I won't be here.
But I will have a special guest on Thursday.
Figures.
A return to the pod for this guy. We'll see you. Peace.
Deuce.